Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. My Olympian mission is to promote lifelong personal development, human empowerment, out-of-the-box thinking, creative self-expression, and a dedication of one's unique talents to community service. All of my labors in this lifetime celebrate the hero's journey in myth, legend, spirituality, popular culture, and in daily life. I firmly believe that the human spirit is essentially heroic and always seeking ways to express its innate nobility and greatness, and that a life fully lived, dedicated to actualizing the highest we can conceive, is the noblest expression of human existence. Today, I am proud to bring you The Art of Healing with Kak Young.
Hello.
Greetings and welcome, Kak. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much, Hercules. How are you on this beginning of February 2021?
Shoveling lots of snow.
Well, that's good, I suppose. That's exercise for you.
Yes, I've worked it into my daily workout routine, so it worked out very well. But it was twice today, three times yesterday, and twice the day before. So keeping busy.
Well, I never knew that they had snow on Mount Olympus, so I'm glad to hear that they do.
See, everyone learns something new there.
There you go. Well, tonight my guest is multi-layered. In fact, when we first talked, we found out that our paths have probably interlaced back and forth for quite a few decades, but we didn't know it until now. And it's really fun when that happens and you find that somebody has been in the same place that you have and, you know, we've just missed each other. We could have even talked to each other, but we've recently connected about 3 years ago. And I want to tell you a little bit about it, about her. Number one, she's a riot. She makes me laugh, and she has an attitude about life that is both humorous and uplifting. Number two, she's an accomplished author with many spiritual books to her name, Life in Transition, Tune Him In, Turn Him On, How to Read Any Man's Mind, The Intuitive Heart and Romance, and her most recent publication, Growing Old Sucks, But It Doesn't Have To. But that's not all. Okay, number three, she's clairvoyant and a medium. Number four, she began her career as a model, so you know she's a knockout. Number five, she worked for the famous Fred Heyman, the owner and founder of Giorgio's Beverly Hills, and she has arranged and managed parties for one of the leading creators of computer technology, Peter Norton. Number six, she has a deep and abiding spiritual side that has taken her into Tibet and India to meet Satya Sai Baba and many other masters in the Far East. Number seven, she has a daughter who is a successful attorney in New York. And number eight, she's here with us tonight to share herself and her brilliant mind. Everybody stand up and give a big shout-out welcome to Servet Hassan. Yay!
Yay! Thank you. Thank you for having me, Kak, and thank you for that lovely introduction. I do love you.
Well, you are so welcome. You are all of those things and more. I just wanted to highlight, you know, the surface, and then you have so much more, which we're going to talk about. So, all right, you've got a new book out, Growing Old Sucks, But It Doesn't Have To, and your co-author is a gentleman named Mark Allen, and you guys are busy promoting it and making people laugh all over the country. Tell me about how that's going.
It's going well. We actually did become an Amazon bestseller for about a couple of months, which is hard to do in this day and age when you are self-publishing. All my other books have come out through Llewellyn Worldwide Publishers, and so they don't do a lot, but it is nice to have a publisher behind you. So I was very skeptical about this, and it worked. It's a good book. I think it speaks to the heart. It's all about aging with attitude.
And that would be a good attitude.
It better be. The alternative is not good. The alternative leads to 6 feet under the ground. So
that's right.
You know, we're all going to grow. We're all going to get up there. It's just that, you know what? Let's make the best of it and make it the best time of our lives, because it can be. It should be, you know?
So how do you take somebody who's all cranky and complaining and, oh, this hurts and this aches and, oh, I don't know, and, you know, somebody who's just kind of miserable about the whole thought of aging, how do you help them?
Well, you know, I'm a cancer survivor. So I just now, last week, found out that I am 3 years cancer-free. The test came back. Yes. Yes, and 3 years ago today, I didn't have one hair on my head or an eyelash or an eyebrow and a big scar down my middle, and I look like an alien from another planet. So I don't do well with people who tell me that they're, you know, getting old and give up and throw in the towel and I just want to sit on the couch and watch Wheel of Fortune. That does not cut it, I think. I mean, everybody has free choice. I can't tell anybody what to do, but I will try to explain to them that there's not a minute we should waste. Not a minute. Just not. Where life is short. You just don't know. I mean, I got an expiration date given to me, and I outlived it. But, you know, some people get an expiration date, and it's real. And some people don't know what their expiration date is, but it's going to come, you know? So my attitude there is just make the most of every moment. There is only now. Make the most of it. Could be little things, too. You don't have to do anything huge, you know?
Now, let's go back, because you had a pretty dramatic beginning. And as I learned more about you, I'm even more fascinated that you have this kind of zippity-doo-dah attitude towards life. So tell me about your beginning. You came from a different country.
I did. I was born in Pakistan in 1958, so yes, I am dating myself because nobody else will date me. But look, it was in that day and age, they were burying baby girls alive. And my name in English, if you translate it from Urdu, Arabic, which is, it's S-A-R-V-A-T, and I spell it with E's because I can't really pronounce my real name, but it means treasure, because they were burying baby girls, and my father and mother already had three boys, and they let me live, and they named me Treasure because they didn't bury me.
Now, why were they burying baby girls in Persia?
What, in Pakistan?
In Pakistan.
Well, and you know, and they do it in Persia, too. And they do it in China, too. They do it in a lot of places that people, in India and other places, too. Girls are expensive and pretty useless. They're expensive because if you marry them off, you have to provide a dowry. And they don't get an education, so they can't really bring in an income. They're useful to help around the house and that kind of thing. But otherwise, after that, you have to, you know, even if the dowry is just two goats and a cow, you got to come up with that, you know? So they discourage girls. Or they did.
But they let you live, and they raised you to be this amazing human being. So how did you get through all that? I mean, how did you?
I didn't. I've got to tell the truth. I grew up in London and Montreal and California. So I'm a British citizen, Canadian citizen, and an American citizen. I'm also Pakistani, which I don't really care. When I got to California and I was in high school, I was working for 17 Magazine as a 17 Magazine council representative, doing a little modeling, all that kind of stuff. And my father announced one day that there's only two ways a Muslim girl leaves a Muslim father's house, either married or in a coffin.
Woo.
And so when I was 50, I didn't understand that, because really, I mean, CAC, what are you going to, I mean, that some guy from another country, that they're going to bring him here, he's going to be older, and he was going to be a doctor or something, and he's going to say, what's for dinner? And I'm going to throw a can of Campbell's soup at his head, and he's going to take out a gun and shoot me. So I figured that's not a good way to go. So I ran away from home when I was 15, and I never went back. I finished high school, and I never went back.
And how did you support yourself? What did you do besides being a model at 17 Magazine?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I did some odd jobs, but I pretty much did that because I had a friend who already graduated from high school, and her roommate moved out unexpectedly. And I think the room was $300 a month or something way back then in the 70s. And I took it. And I worked at a House of Pies on Sunday. And I never had any waitressing experience, but they told me take the job on Sunday because they throw out all their food on Sunday night. And so the chef, the cooks would give it to me, and that's what I ate all week.
Pies.
That's what I did. Well, no, they had burgers and they had other stuff. They had pies, but they had other food too. But, they would give me all the bread and eggs and butter and things like that, basics. You know, so that's what I ate. Yeah, that's how I got by. Yeah.
So then you really made a big deal of yourself because you were working in Beverly Hills for, you know, for Fred Heyman and Giorgio's and all the fancy schmancy stuff on Rodeo Boulevard, which is now, I think, Obama Boulevard. So how did you get into that? You just jumped all over.
I at 17, believe it or not, just about the time I was graduating from high school, they told me I was too old to model, and I didn't look right. I was too exotic looking. I wasn't the girl next door, the Twiggy thing or anything like that. And then that was kind of the trend. It was very girl next door kind of, you know, I was not going to fit into that. And so at, 18 or so, I was out of work and I started looking for jobs and I got a few jobs here and there. And then Reader's Digest version, a friend of mine was going to take a journalism class at UCLA that summer. And her family was going to Europe or something. And she said, I can't take it. But in those days you could transfer the credit. So she gave me the class, and I had no desire to take a journalism class. I just thought it's free. I can get some extra credits. Why not? You know, so I took the class, and at the end of the class, you had to take a tour of the LA Times. And I started talking to the tour guide, whose name was Angel, and she said, do you know how to do anything? I said, I'm looking for a job. She said, can you type? And I was like, yeah, I can type. And she goes, well, call the HR person. And I did, and I went home and I practiced typing for 3 nights straight because I did not know how to type. I lied. So I learned to type, and then I went in the next week and I got a job in the typing pool at the LA Times.
Wow.
And I was there for 10 years. I worked in the fashion department, and that's because they sent me to work for the secretary of Otis Chandler that owns the newspaper. Ooh. And I was, my job was to make sure he got his dinner and they all went home. And so at 6:30, I'm still sitting there waiting for his dinner. They sent me up to the private dining room and then I waited for his cheeseburger or whatever it was. And I took it back down. I just didn't know what to do with it. And I was 19 years old and I had no clue. So I knock on his door and he's on the phone. And in those days you were on the phone, you had a cord, you didn't move, you know, you sat at your desk. So he was kind of trying to wave me in. And I just was stupid. I just didn't know what to do. And so I'm standing there with a tray of food. And then finally he's talking. And then finally he says, you know, put it there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I did. And he hung up and I was leaving and I was going to shut the door and I turned around and I said, can I just say something? And he said, yes. And I said, well, I couldn't help but hear you because I'm standing right here in your office. But I overheard you say you're having dinner with the Shah of Iran as a guest in the private dining and that you were going to serve chicken cordon bleu. And I said, you cannot do that. He will be deeply offended. There is ham in chicken cordon bleu. And he went, what? And then he called the cook and the chef, and then he goes, oh, my God, that could have been a disaster. And then he said, and what would you do? And I said, well, piece of cake, rack of lamb, serve a lemon sorbet in between the entrees. You need a mint jelly. You serve the salad last. He was, like, looking at me like, who are you? And so I sat down for a few minutes, and he said, what do you do? And I said, I was a model, and I can't find a job, and here I am. And he said, well, we're starting a fashion section, and I'd like you to go see the fashion editor next week. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
All because of chicken cordon bleu.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing.
And I think what I'm trying to say, though, is that the universe has a way of sometimes we don't know why things happen to us, but often the universe is leading us in the right direction, and we can figure it out later, you know, how we sort of end up. I don't think anything happens by accident. Wouldn't you agree with that, Kak?
I do. I do. I absolutely do. And I think we learn that later on in life, because when we're young, you know, everything is like, oh, my God, and what's next? And, oh, did I screw that up? You know, there's the insecurities of youth. I don't know if that's true anymore, but certainly as we were breaking through glass ceilings and coming up in the world, that was very true there. There was a lot of nobody had walked those paths before, and those of us who dared sort of said, well, yikes, okay, I got there, now what's next?
Right, right. Well, yeah, and that's part of what this book is about. You have some newfound knowledge, you have this knowledge of being able to know that things don't happen by mistake, and that, you know, there's a quote at the very beginning of the book by David Bowie, and it's, aging is an extraordinary process where you become the person you always should have been. And that's what I think happens as we get older, because I'm in my 60s, I told you I'm all born in 58, so I'm 62. But I now feel like I can just be completely and totally me. And I have felt that way for a long time, but not this deeply. You know, I'm very authentic to who I truly am.
So I'm going to ask you two questions here. One, I'm going to ask you who your main mentors were. And then two, I'm going to interlace that with, you have kind of a double life. You have this very deep, intuitive, mystical, metaphysical, spiritual life. And yet you work in the core of, you know, the industry, be it newspapers or publicity and things. Tell me about both of those lives and how they happened and how you managed them.
Well, it was an evolving process. You know, I was working at the LA Times kind of by mistake, I thought. I didn't wake up one day and say I want to be a writer. I did like it, and I did always do well in my writing classes in high school and such. So I thought it was fun, but it wasn't anything. And then at the same time, I was going through, what's this all about? Because I didn't want to be like my parents or, you know, my mother was married when she was 12. My father was, you know, 16. So, yeah, I know. She had her first child at 13. I mean, it's just that. So I was rebelling against all of that. I don't care if I ever get married. I don't care if I ever have children. I just want to do a really fast 40 and get off this planet. But at the same time, somebody was gnawing at me on the inside. And I remember I had to go to the Bodhi tree. It was in LA on Melrose. It was the only place you could go. This was before Amazon and all that. I was like 2021, and I had to go all the way to the Bodhi tree to find a deck of tarot cards, because you couldn't find them anywhere. There was no internet, and nobody sold them. And
right.
I had to go. So I trekked down there and got this deck of, you know, cards. And at the same time, the guy was like, "Oh, what are you into?" And I said, "Nothing. I don't know." Like, And so I started my spiritual journey there. I did some reading. I started. Then I got involved with Terry Cole Whitaker, who you also know, and studied with her. And she's the one who really kind of put me on a path, gave me the readings and the teachings, and then at some point just said, you need to evolve further. I did go on some trips by myself, but they weren't very spiritually enlightening. I think I was just too young to appreciate Sai Baba and things like that. But then studying with her, and then also she's saying to me, okay, now you've got to go further than me, and there's more gurus and people that you can study with. And I did. So that's how that kind of, it was an evolutionary process. You know, it's not, I don't think anybody wakes up one day and they're enlightened. I don't even think you can do the eat, pray, love thing and go to, you know, Italy and, wherever, Italy and India, and then and suddenly wake up and say, okay, now I'm enlightened. You know, that was a process for her too, which I'm sure took longer than a year, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I'm still learning, Kat. I'm still studying every day. I still learn. I still go with it. Yeah.
So what is it that you haven't done or studied with that you want to now?
I think I am in a place where I don't think I need any more information. I need to process the information because really, honestly, it's all been said. It's all been done. Even like over a decade now with the secret, you know, there was no secret. All that stuff has been said before. As a
right.
man thinketh, I think James Allen wrote that in the, 20s or 30s or something. And Marcus Aurelius wrote Meditations in the year 200 or something, you know. So these ideas and everything have been around forever. And all of the studying, and it's been said many different ways, and some people need to hear it a different way in a language that they can process. So I finally got all of that, and I think the idea now is to sit in meditation and use it to apply it, to really understand it. That's where I'm at right now. And like I said, I'm always going to continue to study and grow because I don't think you can ever stop doing that. But I, what I'm trying to do now is it's like, okay, I have the information. I know what it's about, especially since I had cancer. So let's apply it now. Let's put it into action. Let's incorporate it into every cell of my being and every moment and every day of my life.
What are you most grateful for?
Love. Just love. And it's not about loving necessarily somebody loving me. It's loving others, but it's also loving who you really are. And in a sly kind of way, I kind of wrote my side of the story of growing old sucks, but it doesn't have to, as it being about a process when you reach a certain age, you can just love yourself for being you. And it's not narcissistic. It's that self-love that everything we do comes from our own self-love. It's our ability to love others, our ability to make money, our ability to do anything comes out of what we think of ourselves. And knowing that we are truly part of Source and not just, you know, we're not our body, we're not our mind, we're not our parents, we're not our anything. We are a part of this big spiritual Source. And I think that I think that is love.
So how does that, how do you, other than sitting and meditating, how do you run your life based on that? What changes because you believe that?
Well, I don't think in A Course in Miracles, it says the opposite of love is fear, which is fine. I have nothing against what anybody says, but I don't believe that personally. I do believe that the opposite of love is hate, and I do believe the opposite of fear is peace. So I think what we strive for is love and peace. serenity and peace like that. But I don't do anything coming from a fear-based feeling of any kind, and including just dealing with stuff with and with the dumpster fire of a year we had last year, 2020. We're dealing with a lot of stuff. But one of the women I talked to in the book was a friend of mine, and she was like almost 100. She was 98 or something like that, I think. And I asked her, she looked fabulous and she was feeling great. And I asked her what her secret was. And she said to me, "I have never worried in my life, ever." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "No matter," bless you. She said,
"Thank
no
you.
Matter what," you're welcome. No matter what was going on, she said, "There's nothing you can do about it. If you can, do it. And if you can't, don't worry about it, because it's just going to, it just puts you in fear and it just puts you in a place where nothing happens. When you're happy, when you feel good, and you just, no matter what's going down, life takes care of itself and the universe moves for you." You know? It's about
so if you had if you had control, or you had you know, the ability to change your life, would you change the cancer part, or would you keep the cancer part?
No, I wouldn't change anything. I think I heard Oprah say that once, where, you know, you get to a certain place in your life where you realize if you look back, you wouldn't change a hair on a person's head, because that could change your whole trajectory. And so I can't, wherever I'm going to end up, and I kind of have a good idea, I don't know that I would go there if I didn't go through what I went through, you know? So no, I wouldn't change that. I don't know if I would do it again. If I got sick again, I don't, if I had, knock wood, but if I had cancer again, I don't know that if I could go through what I went through this last time. It was hard.
Sure.
But
sure.
Yeah. I might just say forget it. You know.
Well, I hope you don't. Call me first.
No, I would call you first. But I mean, those are choices that come up as you go along, as you live your life. And I think that I mean, honestly, if I didn't have that childhood I had, or I wouldn't have anything to write about. You know, I mean, I've been through a lot. I've been through a lot in one lifetime, more than most people do in 10, I think. So I think in a way it's just, no, I wouldn't change anything at all. No.
So, but you are friends with your parents now. They didn't try to get you married, and they didn't take you out in a coffin. So you're friends with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. I am. I love my parents very much. My mother is 84 and my dad is 88. So think about it, you know, I'm really bad at math, but 84 minus 12 is how many years they've been married.
Right.
It's a heck of a long time. It's a long time. They've been married a very long time, and they never killed each other. So I think, wow, you know, that's great.
Wow, yeah. Wow. So women are still not as free in Pakistan as we are here, but they have made progress.
Yes, not as much as I would like to see, but yes, I mean, it's better than nothing. They can drive, they can, you know, they can't go out much, they can't do a lot of things still, but they are able to get an education, which is key, I feel.
Sure, right. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What would you say that your major turning points are in your life?
Oh, God, your show's not long enough. But I think if I got to pick a few, I mean, because I think the turning points were running away from home. I think my husband dying 26 years ago, and I didn't know he wasn't divorced from his first wife, so that was a big mess. Having my daughter, who's now 31 and an attorney in New York, and I raised her myself because he died. I think fast forward, it would be the cancer. If I have to just pick a few that have really changed me. Yeah.
Well, those are pretty significant situations in life. And you know, and here you are, cheerful and helping other people. You know, you could be writing a book about, oh, poor me, but no, you're writing a book about growing old sucks, but it doesn't have to.
Right, right. I think everything leads to something, you know, and you just don't know. When I was pregnant, it was not my husband who died that did this, because he was not her biological father. I married him right after I had her. Actually, I was pregnant, but her biological father didn't want a child, so he tried to kill me. Well, actually, he didn't try to kill me. He tried to kill the baby, which would entail killing me. So I was pretty beat up. And by the time I got to the hospital, the doctor said to me, "You are half dead, but your baby's fine." He goes, I can't believe it, but the baby's fine." And I said, "Oh, okay, good." And then I went on and I started a life again and raised her and all of this. But as she got older, I thought to myself, I need to do something. I don't want this to ever happen to me or her. So I enrolled us in a Taekwondo class. And she went 3 or 4 times and said, "Forget it, Mom, I don't give a crap." And I kept going, and I got up there and, you know, got a black belt. And I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm going to start teaching these kids how to do a few things." Because she's not interested in going to a class. So in her middle school, the English teacher let me come and talk, and I would say, you know, just simple things like, do not yell help if you're in trouble. Nobody will help you. You should scream, call 911. You know, don't somebody will call 911, but nobody's going to come if you scream help. And I was giving him all these tips on how to run away and, you know, how to get out of situations. And then all the little kids, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I was doing it at all the schools for free. And I was just trying to help. And then they said, "Where's your book? Where's your book? Where's your book?" And I didn't have a book. So that's how I wrote How to Read Any Man's Mind, which later got picked up by Llewellyn. See, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. But that's
right.
Really amazing. So of your books that you've written, what's your favorite and why?
I don't know. Isn't that like picking your favorite child or your favorite kitty cat? You have, or I can't do that.
Everybody has one secretly.
Secretly, I love The Intuitive Heart of Romance, only because I wrote a lot of poetry in it, which I don't get a chance to do. So there's a lot of my poems are in there, which was kind of cool, you know.
Well, and you host your own podcast now. You have that. You never stop. You're this busy little top, always buzzing with new ideas, and you're always helping the world.
Well, and you too. You're doing the same thing. I'm writing about everything we've been talking about. I'm writing a book now called Life is a Cosmic Comedy, How I Found Out Why the Hell We're All Here. And it has really great chapters on all the stuff I've learned through cancer, which is like, no, you can't send your family back and get another one. And if he said he couldn't live without you, how come he's not dead? You know, things like, I mean, I'm talking about everything I learned and how I took all those studies of my master's and how it all kicked in. I learned more in 3 years of after the cancer than I have in the last 30, for sure.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, now, you've had a lot of famous people give testimonials to your book, and they are, well, you know, just tell us about them and how you get to them, and I mean, everybody just loves you, Servette. Everybody adores you, so it's very fun to read people contributing to you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how I found everybody. I think it's just you endorsed this book too, you know, thank you very much. Mark Allen is the host of Late Night Health on KBC Radio, so he had a lot of connections too. And it's just people I've met over the years that just have stayed in touch and are nice enough to do that for you. And the thing too is you, if you really want, you know, some people just don't ask. You got to ask. everybody thinks, oh, nobody will do that. And then they just don't, they don't go there. And part of getting older, part of it is, you know, just go for it. Right?
Now, how are you going to design your future? You've had this amazing past. You've learned a lot from it. It hasn't killed you. And so what are you going to do now for the future, for beyond? What are your plans?
Well, like I said, I'm writing a book, The Life is a Cosmic Comedy, and I really want that that's funny, but it's real, and it kind of explains all these principles I've learned in a really simple way that anyone can get, and I want to really put that forward. It's been my kind of quest to take the mystical out of mysticism. It's not that hard, and I kind of want everyone to get it, that it's easier than they think. And so I do want to do that. I would love to have a relationship again, because it's been hard when you, oh, hi, I'm Servette, I have cancer, do you want to date me? So I kind of now can think about that. And, you know, I hope I can meet somebody before my boobs hit my knees. That would be great.
Well, maybe you meet a surgeon and he can lift those up for you.
Well, maybe that would be ideal, wouldn't it?
That would be great.
You know, there's some parts of aging you can't, you know, like it's just gravity, you know. And also because I had cancer, I'm never, ever going to have injections. And I probably wouldn't have anyway. You know what I mean? The Botox and the Juvederm, whatever. You know, I'm never going to do that. And I'm never going to have surgery. So I've actually just embraced exactly how I look. I think, if I see a wrinkle now, I give it a kiss and just keep going.
Oh, that's great. Well, now tell us a little bit more about your book. We've kind of skirted over the top of it, but tell me more about some of the chapters and some of the content. I think people listening are going to want to buy it, but let's tell them a little bit more about it and a little bit more about Mark besides being a host of a late night show.
Well, Mark is a fabulous guy. He's super funny, and he's the one who had this idea. He's had growing old sucks, but it doesn't have to, for like over a decade. And then finally, I just said to him, why don't you do the book? And he's like, oh, no. And I said, well, why don't we do it together? I'll do the female aspect, you do the male. And so then I just put it all together, and then I had to kick his butt to get his part done, but he did. And then, you know, I'd say, okay, I'm going to write a chapter on, you know, aging and sex, or aging and exercise, or aging and food. And then he'd just have to do it because I'd already done my little part. So then he came along and did his, which was great. And I love him. He's like a family friend. He and his wife are really good friends of mine. So, you know, I think that's great, too, that we all got along. And it just worked out beautifully. So,
well,
I mean, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, doesn't he also do a cooking show? Believe it's, it's on YouTube.
Right. It's on Facebook Live, and then it goes up on YouTube. And it's, it's Mark Allen Cooks Your Dinner. And he's trying to push the growing old sucks part, like get up and do something. It's healthy food. As you age, you should eat better. And, you know, but also encouraging people to just get up and make it with them. Because part of it, too, is that you want to get off the couch. You don't want to sit there and watch, you know, Wheel of Fortune every night or whatever. You need to, even if nobody has to go run a marathon or jump out of an airplane or something, but just little things that you can do that can help you stay young and stay more active. You know, you've got to exercise your body, but you've also got to exercise your mind. And it's little things, Kat. Like just one of the doctors told me, if you just take, instead of like brushing your teeth with your right hand, brush your teeth with your left hand a couple of days. It makes your brain think. Or, you know, take a different route to work or go to a different grocery store. Learn a language. Do something that keeps your mind active and broaden your interests. And he always wanted to have a cooking show. So he decided, why not? And I said, that's what we've been writing about. So go do it, you know?
So yeah, well, that's remarkable. And it's very nice. He's very personable, and he's very, you know, and his kitchen is so neat. My gosh, the kitchen there is lovely to watch. It's so clean and neat.
Yeah, that's Carol. That's his wife. He cooks, she cleans. It kind of works for them. But, and he talks about little things in the book, and he loves to cook. That's his passion. And that's another thing. I think all of us, as we get up there, if you haven't explored your passion, there is no time like the present. You know?
Well, that's true. That's true. I think, you know, sometimes people, resources limit them in terms of following a real passion they have sometimes. So that's a hard one to surmount. But other passions, ones that can be affordable, ones that can take you out in nature, ones that can, you know, you can travel from your armchair.
Exactly. I mean, Betty White just turned 99. Was she just 99 last week, I think? Anyway, she just had a birthday, and she's up there. And one of the things that one of her quotes is in the book, too, and I'm just going to verbatim because I don't memorize all the quotes, but she just said, don't try to be young. Just open your mind and stay interested in stuff. Because there are so many things that you won't live long enough to find out about, but just stay curious about them and keep going and keep going. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, so you're writing the book, but what else? I mean, what are you looking to do? Are you going to be a teacher, a guru? Are you going to I want to know what your vision for yourself is beyond the book.
Well, I don't ever want to be a guru. I do want to help people, but a guru is a whole different world. I feel like I would really like to empower women. I love empowering people, but I want to focus more on women, especially women from third world countries or in third world countries, where we can encourage them to find ways to educate themselves and their children and their daughters, and to kind of form some kind of more independence and forge forward into a new world. I think, you know, women are, and our children, obviously, are our future, you know? I think there's a lot there.
And how do you do that from here? How do we do that from California?
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to explore that as I go. I want to do it for women here. Believe it or not, there are just as many women here who are not empowered as there are around the rest of the world. In fact, I was really kind of shocked at how much more prevalent it is than I thought it would be. So I would like to start with here because I am here. And, you know, with the pandemic, it's a little difficult, but I think it's going to have to entail getting out there and talking about it. And one of the other things I really want to do is I really want to talk to women anywhere and everywhere about not neglecting their health to the point where, oh, it's nothing. If I had waited one more month to have my surgery, I would likely be dead by now. My surgeon does not mince words or make things up. And she said, I probably could have bought you 6 months, maybe a year, but you would definitely not have lived. I had a very rare form of cancer, clear cell. And ovarian cancer is called, just regular ovarian cancer, is called the silent killer because it's usually too late when you catch it. And women especially have a tendency to ignore things that are not right in their body. And we've got to put a stop to that, because if you catch ovarian cancer soon enough, it can be stopped.
What about a TED Talk? Have you ever done one? Do you think about doing one?
I've been thinking about doing one, and I don't know how, but I'm going to explore that as well.
Well, there's two things that I really want you to do. One is the Moth, and one is a TED Talk. And because I think you have the stories for that, you have the presentation for it, and that will catapult you forward into your mission of helping women be empowered. And I think you are the one to do that. So those would be two great things. And, you know, and I was going to ask you, how can people support you in your mission? Certainly by, you know, liking and tuning in and all that. How would people reach you if they wanted to reach out and connect with you?
Well, they can go to my website, and it's my name. It's just www.servethassan.com. So it's just servethassan.com.
All right, so they can reach you there.
Any and all, yeah, and you can get any and all of my books on Amazon, obviously, and you can get them also on my website. But you can, and there is a website now called growingoldsucks.com too, if you're more interested in just that one book, that has more of, you know, Mark's cooking shows and things like that. But you can always reach me on my website, and also at servette@servettehassan.com if you want to email me. And I'm definitely looking into, I wasn't well enough to do a TED Talk a year or so ago, even because even though my hair grew back, I still wasn't completely strong, you know. And
right.
now I'm starting to feel like my old self again.
I want to also give the name of your publicist so that people could call you up and ask you to come speak and inspire them. And I believe that is Carol Bernstein at 805-391-0310.
Correct.
And we will post that. So that's another way to reach you. And about spiritual seekers, people who say, wow, I want to know what she knows. Where do I go? What do I do? There's no more Bodhi tree. You can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went there too. We all went there. Books fell off the shelf. They changed our lives. I mean, it was kind of like everything happened at the Bodhi tree in terms of the spiritual growth. And I'm so sad that it's not there anymore. It just breaks my heart.
Too.
It should be like a forever thing like the Parthenon is in Athens. But
That was 40 years I'd been going there for 40 years. Yeah.
You could sit there on the little wooden chairs in any corner and read, and there was always place to sit and interesting people reading stuff, and they had incense going all the time, and you could have, some interesting tea if you wanted to. Just an amazing little community. It's just really sad that it's not there.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. It is sad. But, yeah, I learned a lot in that bookstore. A lot of it came from there.
Yeah, I think we all did. You know, and they had everything. Yeah. They had everything that you could possibly be interested in. It's kind of like, you know, one thing led to another. And you would find, I'll go back and I'll get that. And then so you just accumulated all this wonderful information and met people. I mean, everybody, even Shirley MacLaine went to the Bodhi tree and a book fell off on her head. And that started her on her spiritual path.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, and I don't even know how I found the Bodhi tree. It was just like, sort of like, well, I think I must have heard the buzz about it, but it was just like, something just drew me in there. It was like, I couldn't help it.
Well, you said, and, you know, if you wanted a tarot deck, that was the only place you could really get one for a long time. I mean, there were some, you know, back alley places that had stuff, but, you know, you needed an escort to go into a lot of those. That was the place where you could find that, and then you could find a teacher. But now, did you grow up knowing how to read tarot, or did you teach yourself?
No, I taught myself. And then I don't know how it happened, but I was in Laguna Beach, and somebody said, do you want to do readings at the Chakra Shack? And I was like, oh, okay, do you think I can? I didn't even think I could. And then all these people would come in and get readings, and then they'd tell other people, and they'd tell the store, and then it was like, oh, she's always right, oh, she's always right. And then I just got a little following. So then I got a little clientele to do intuitive readings too, which was how that happened. So that was kind of interesting. So I've done a lot of studying on the tarot cards, but I think that I think if you gave me chicken bones, I could read those too. It's just that I start to focus in on something, and that is a tool I'm using, but it's really coming from somewhere else, and I'm downloading because I take no credit for it. It's almost like I'm just a mouthpiece, and I'm getting information, and I just spit it out. Yeah.
Well, you know, I personally think that you should, you know, have a little movement of your own and a website and lots of things going. I mean, I see you as a center where people can come, and you're so down to earth, Servette. You are so approachable and not, you know, all up in the air about anything, and you really are that kind of a person. I would love to see you offer yourself to guide and lead and help people seek whatever it is they want to seek and guide them along the way. I mean, you know so much. You have been through so much. You know, not that I can tell you what to do with your life. I'm just telling you what I see as a way for all of your talents to be manifested through a center that you create online, and you can talk to people, and they will flock to you by the thousands.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kat. That's the goal. I mean, that's how I'm going to be able to empower women. I can't do it by myself. And so it's just a question of getting things organized and going again. And like I said, I think a TED Talk would be a good way to start. I just have to figure out how to get it done.
You Google it and you find out, and they do TED Talks in all kinds of places, and you send in a little specimen of what you want to talk about, and the moth, the same thing. The moth is just such a good thing, and you have such glorious stories. I mean, you could pick one, two, three. You could pick from a myriad of them and tell your story, and it's you know, a 10-minute talk with a point and a point of view, and it's just, I think they're very enlightening, and I think that movement itself is changing a lot of people's lives in a really good way and giving them confidence and hope. And I'm not so different, you know, that kind of a thing, and acceptance. So I think you're a great candidate for those kinds of places.
Right. Thank you. If you look at any and all of my books, somewhere in there, I will always talk about accepting yourself exactly as you are, because when you reach your own center of authenticity and live your life from that place, magic happens. That's where the magic happens.
Yes, and that's, you know, what you can get people to realize. I remember seeing Jenny Lawson on a TED Talk, and Jenny Lawson is the author of just some, you know, hysterical books that I just love, Let's Pretend It Never Happened, and all kinds of things. I think she's got anywhere from 7 to 10 books. And she has great fears and great physical brain problems that cause her to have anxiety attacks. But she stood out there and she gave her talk, and she talked about her anxiety and her symptoms. And so she did it, and it was amazing to watch, because you could see how she was just pushing through, and it gave so many people hope. And her website is all about that. It's all about looking for the darker things and sharing them and living through it and laughing. And, you know, how she helps people is just remarkable. I love her website. And I think you have the same kind of gifts, and I would like to see you do that. In fact, I want to support you do that, because I think you're just this magnificent, rich plum pudding that everybody needs a slice of.
Oh, thank you. Bless you. Thank you so much.
Well,
yeah,
it's
that's
true.
Great.
Well, let's recap a little bit here. I want to talk about all of your books again. You have Life in Transition, Tune Him In, Turn Him On, How to Read Any Man's Mind, The Intuitive Heart in Romance, and Growing Old Sucks, But It Doesn't Have to. Did I miss any?
Nope. Thank you. I have a hard time remembering myself. No, thank
all
you
right.
so
and,
much.
And
so.
People can find you at your website, Servet, S-E-R-V-E-T, Hassan, Hassan.com. And they can find you there, and we will be posting contacts for you. And what would you like to leave the evening with? What would you like to sum up your, whatever you'd like to say and leave us with?
Well, I just think that Growing Old Sucks, But It Doesn't Have To is my latest book. So I will just sum up by saying I don't believe in anti-aging, because if you're anti-aging, it means you're dead. So embrace, don't try to be young, embrace, or don't try to be anything. Try to be who you are. It's your life to live as you choose, not how your parents or your kids or your grandkids or your friends or your anybody tell you. It's your life to live as you choose. And this is your chance. It's not a dress rehearsal. As we all know, it's kind of trite to say that, but it's true. This is it. So take it, and from me, because I know it can go fast if you're not careful. And do what's in your heart, and be exactly who you are.
Well, I think that's wise advice to everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Servet Hassan, my dear friend, and she will always be my friend, always in my life, and I hope she'll be in yours too. It's been a pleasure having you on The Art of Healing. You certainly have healed, and you've shown us the art of that as well, and I thank you for
your
time, and I wish you all the best with your wonderful book that is hilarious and totally readable, and I hope you just sell millions of copies and a lot of people are inspired by your words and marks. And thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, namaste, Kak, and bless you. Thank you. Thank you for having
pleasure.
Me. Pleasure.
And Hercules, it's all back to you, and I hope you're
wow.
not going to let Growing Old suck.
No. I found a lot of the same things on my journey. For a while, they were thinking of making eccentricity a diagnostic category back when I worked in the human services in the 80s. And I'm chronically eccentric, so I can't help but be who I am fully.
I love that, chronically eccentric. That should be the title of your book, Hercules.
Maybe it should. And another standing ovation. This was an awesome conversation.
Hey! Oh, aren't you sweet? Well, I love Servet. She's just the best. So
thank
I'm
you.
Glad she decided to come on and share herself with us. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank
As
you so
I,
much, both
thank
of you.
You.
Thank you.
And thanks to
all
everybody.
All right, Hercules.
Take care, Kak. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's all on you. Bless your heart. We'll see you next month. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks to everybody who's joined us from home, whether you listen live or you're going to be joining us on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And I think it's appropriate that we close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Adams.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you